Hello, I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and welcome to the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call the remote meeting of the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll to determine which members are present.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
Present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Cleavorn, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Kresha.
Kresha, present.
Kresha, present. Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Mecklen, present. Representative Noor.
No, present.
Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, present.
Heintzman, present. And Representative Mason.
Present.
Mason, present. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see everyone back from our time away from the legislatures. And I hope that you had a productive and relaxing time off during the break here. And I know many, many were busy writing legislation, and I want to thank all the staff who have invested so much time over this break helping us put together bills and legislation to move forward this session. So I want to thank everyone, and just reiterate what an honor it is to serve with all of you to help create opportunities for our students to thrive and to attain economic security for themselves and their families. And today we will be walking through the provisions of the DE amendment to House File 993. Our nonpartisan staff will take the lead and walk us through the bill. And afterwards, if time permits, we have asked the Office of Higher Education, the University of Minnesota, and Minnesota State to provide testimony on the bill. Tomorrow we will hear public testimony and we'll begin to take official action on the bill. Finally, we set aside time on Thursday evening, if necessary, to finish markup and passage of the bill. And before I go on today, I just wanted to thank Mr. Ken Savory and Mr. Nathan Hopkins for all of their hard work on drafting the language for this bill. And thank you to all of our staff who have been involved as well. A lot of work goes into this, and the dedication and commitment and their willingness to work with all the different members to help create a good bill is greatly appreciated. So I want to thank them for their time. So members, today I'm honored to share with you the Delete All Amendment to House File 993, which will serve as our House Higher Education budget. In an unprecedented year of global pandemic, and with all the firsthand student testimony we have received this session, we know Minnesotans in college and post-secondary job skill programs have been hit especially hard. I'm proud of the package our committee crafted together to serve students now and in the future. Minnesota students deserve the opportunity to achieve their dreams and provide economic security for themselves and their families. In our budget, we are investing in Minnesotans so they can thrive and emerge stronger post-COVID-19. I just want to highlight a couple things mentioned in this bill, in this package. It will hold tuition flat at Minnesota State. It makes a permanent increase to the funding of the state grant program, which impacts around 75,000 students and oftentimes more. Strengthens our economy by expanding the ranks of career and technical education instructors in our high school pilot program in southeastern Minnesota at Winona State and Southeast College. Prioritize financial support for people of color and American Indians students studying to become teachers, which is an important tool in helping close the opportunity gap in Minnesota. With us to walk through the DE amendment, as I said before, we have House Fiscal Analyst Ken Savory, along with Nathan Hopkins from House Research. Mr. Savory, please present the bill to the committee, and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the tape, my name is Ken Savory, House Fiscal Staff. I'm going to share my screen of a spreadsheet that members were provided in advance. And so the spreadsheet I'm working from has the two columns, columns K, L, M, N, and O for the DE2 amendment, House File 993. Chair members, if you would look at the top portion of the bill, lines 5 through 10, our overall state appropriations to the state agencies. For the Office of Higher Education, the overall general fund appropriation is $275,438,000 in fiscal 22, $275,298,000 in fiscal year 23. That is a 15.190 increase above the 22-23 base. Line 7 are the appropriation totals for Minnesota State. Minnesota State is appropriated $786,184,000 in FY22, $807,284,000 in 23, and that is $68,400,000 above the FY22-23 base. Line 8 is the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota general fund total appropriation is $686,156,000 in the first year, $698,406,000 in the second year. That is a total appropriation increase of $41,750,000. Now I'm going to go through the change items and programs as they would appear in the bill. Those programs will start first with the Office of Higher Education. The state grant program appears first on the spreadsheet, and that is line 26. The state grant program and the DE receives a $6.3 million increase for the biennium. That brings the total for the state grant to $210,587,000 in the first year, $210,587,000 in the second year, and that is a permanent base increase. Line 28 is the agency administration. The agency administration for the Office of Higher Education is a $700,000 increase. That brings the totals for FY22 and 23 to $4,677,000 in each year. And that is a permanent base increase. Line 29 is the child care grants. The child care grants are funded at $6,694,000 in each fiscal year. That is the base appropriation, and that base is unchanged. Line 30 is the state work study program. That's an appropriation of $14,502,000 each fiscal year. That is the base appropriation that remains unchanged. Line 31 is the appropriation for interstate tuition reciprocity. This was reduced in the DE by $5,036,000, which brings the biennial appropriation to $17 million. That is a base decrease. Line 32 is the Safety Officer Survivor Program. That is a $100,000 base appropriation each year. Line 33 is the Indian scholarships. That is a $3.5 million base appropriation each year, and that was unchanged from the base. Line 34 are the tribal college grants. That is a $150,000 base appropriation each year, and that is an unchanged appropriation from the base. Line 35 is the ICAP, or Intervention for College Attendance Program grants. This is a $1.430 million increase across the biennium. That brings the total in each year to $1.5 million for the ICAP program. Line 36 is a student parent information appropriation. That is a base appropriation of $122,000, but is unchanged. Line 37 is the Get Ready program. That is a base appropriation of $180,000 in each year. That remains unchanged. Line 38 is the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership. That is a $45,000 appropriation in each year, and that remains unchanged from the base. Line 39 is the Midwest Higher Education Compact. That is a $115,000 appropriation in each year. That also remains unchanged from the base. Line 40 is the United Family Medicine Residency Program. That is a $501,000 appropriation each year, and that remains unchanged from the base. Line 41 is the MinLink Gateway and Minitex program. That is a $5.905 million appropriation in each fiscal year, and that remains unchanged from the base. Line 42 is the SLEDS program, the Statewide Longitudinal Education Data System. That is a base appropriation of $1.782 million in each fiscal year, and that remains unchanged from the base. I'm going to scroll to the next page of the spreadsheet. Line 43 is the Hennepin County Medical Center appropriation. That is $645,000 in each fiscal year, unchanged from the base. Line 44 is the College Possible program. That is a $500,000 appropriation in each year, unchanged from the base. Line 45 is the Spinal Cord and Traumatic Brain Injury Research Grants program. That is a $3 million appropriation in each year, which is also unchanged from the base. Line 46 is the Summer Academic Enrichment Program, which is $750,000 in each fiscal year over the biennium. That's a $1 million increase, and that is an increase to the base. Line 47 is the Dual Training Competency Grants for the Office of Higher Education. That remains at the base appropriation of $2 million in each fiscal year. Line 48 was the governor's change item for dual training competency grants for Department of Labor and Industry, or DOLLI. That appropriation was removed from the bill, so a reduction of $400,000 in each fiscal year. Line 49 is the campus sexual assault reporting appropriation. That is $25,000 in each fiscal year, and that is unchanged from the base. Line 50 is the Campus Sexual Violence Prevention and Response Coordinator appropriation. That is $150,000 in each fiscal year, and that remains unchanged from the base. Line 51 is the Emergency Assistance for Postsecondary Students. That is a $1.3 million increase from the base and brings the appropriation each year to $825,000 in each fiscal year. And this is the base increase, and this goes into the tails. Line 52 is the Grants to Teaching Candidates program. I'll pause here to point out that the Grants to Teaching Candidates program has a base of $2.5 million. The DE amendment reduces the base to $500,000 in each fiscal year. Changes within language, which Mr. Hopkins will go into after I'm done, state that the Grants to Teaching Candidates program on line 52 will apply only to those applicants in shortage areas. So that is a reduction in specification in on line 52. Line 53 is a new program. It's the grants to underrepresented teaching candidates. This takes the reduction from line 52 and applies it in addition to new dollars from the target allocation. So the new program, which applies specifically to underrepresented teacher candidates, is $2.293 million in fiscal year 22, and then $2.628 million in fiscal year 23. The $2.628 million then goes into the tails for a total of $4.921 million in FY22-23, and then additionally $5.256 million in FY24-25. Line 54 is the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program. This base appropriation remains unchanged at $200,000 in each fiscal year. Line 55 is a large animal veterinary forgiveness program. This remains unchanged at $375,000 in each fiscal year. Line 56 is the Ag Education Loan Forgiveness Program. This remains unchanged from the base at $50,000 in each fiscal year. Line 57 is the Aviation Degree Loan Forgiveness Program. This remains at $25,000 in each fiscal year. Line 58 is the Students with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Grants. This is the base appropriation that remains the same at $200,000 in each fiscal year. Line 59 is the LRAP, or the Loan Repayment Assistance Program for Attorneys. This is $25,000 in each fiscal year. Line 60 is the Minnesota Independence Life College and Community, or MICC, appropriation. This remains unchanged at $1 million in each fiscal year from the base. Line 62 is the Student Loan Counseling Program. That is $200,000 in each fiscal year. This remains unchanged from the base. Line 64 is the Hunger Free Campus Grants. The DE includes $275,000 in the first year and $150,000 in the second year for a total of $425,000 in the FY22-23 biennium. $150,000 then goes forward into the tails at $150,000 in each fiscal year. Line 65 is the Concurrent Enrollment Courses Appropriation. This remains unchanged from the base at $340,000 in each fiscal year. Line 66 is the Addiction Medicine Fellowship, which is $275,000 in each fiscal year, but this is a one-time appropriation and does not extend into the tails. Line 67 is the Aspiring Teacher of Color Scholarships Program. That is $2 million appropriated in the first year of the biennium and $2.5 million appropriated in the second year of biennium for a biennial appropriation of $4.5 million. These are one-time appropriations and do not extend into the tails. Line 64 is the Direct Admissions Minnesota Program, which is $925,000 in the first year, $75,000 in the second year, and then an additional $75,000 in each year thereafter into the tails. Line 69 is a note to administrative cancellations that are proposed within the bill at $340,000 of cancellations. This combined with the $5 million of cancellations in the state grant program, total of $5.340 million in cancellations for Office of Higher Ed. I'll move down to the change items sections. The change items located on line 73 and then continuing on to line 88 are the appropriation changes, which I just discussed. Those are essentially duplicative of the DE minus base columns in FY22-23 and the other change from base column in FY24-25. Those are there for member references. That concludes the OHE section. I'll begin with Minnesota State or MinSKU. The lines 105 and 117 are riders within the appropriations to MinState. And I'll just briefly go over them. Many of them are unchanged from the base. The workforce developmental scholarships at $4 million in each fiscal year. That remains unchanged from the base. The supplemental aid to non-metro colleges, this is $3 million in each fiscal year. That remains unchanged from the base. Line 107, line 108, the Cook County Higher Education Board, this remains unchanged at $300,000 in each fiscal year. Line 109, the sexual assault reporting policies appropriation is $40,000 in each fiscal year. Line 110, which is the ISRS Next Generation appropriation, which is $8 million in each fiscal year, unchanged from the base. Additionally, there are some riders that were inserted, and I'll go over those again in the change items, but Y111, the Z-degree textbook program, this is a $500,000 up per year increase of the program. So that's a $1 million increase for the Z-degree textbook program. That's a one-time appropriation, and that does not continue into the TAILS. Skipping over some blank lines, the next change is on line 115, which is supporting students' basic needs. This is a $1.250 million appropriation in FY22, and then again in FY23. This is a base, a new rider and a base adjustment, so this goes into the TAILS. Line 116 is the Career and Technical Education Pilot Program. This is a one-time appropriation of $400,000 only in the first year of the biennium. Lines 121, sorry about that. Line 121, or line 120, the Campus Responsiveness and Stabilization O&M increase. That's a $64.5 million increase to the O&M. So that's $21.5 million in the first year, $43 million in the second year. The $43 million then continues into the TAILS for a TAILS increase of $86 million. Line 121 is supporting students' basic needs that I discussed before. The rider is identical to the increase as is displayed in the change items here. Additionally, the same for the line 122, the Z-degree textbook program, and line 123, the career and technical education pilot program. In total change items on 125, the total change for Minnesota State is $68,400,000 for FY22-23. And then $88,500,000 in FY24-25. And that concludes the Minnesota State section. You can find the overall Minnesota State total on line 131, which I discussed before at the top of the spreadsheet. Line 134 starts at the University of Minnesota. I'll again go over some of the riders as are detailed in the dotted line section between lines 138 and 145. Many of the riders are unchanged from the base. Line 139 is the health training restoration at $7.8 million per year. That's a base rider that remains unchanged. The same can be said for line 140, the medical school development rider, which is $15 million in each fiscal year. That rider remains unchanged. Line 141 is the MnDrive appropriation, which is $4 million in each year, and that rider remains unchanged. Line 142 is the Morris Campus Scholarship Payment Assistance rider, which is $500,000 in each fiscal year, an unchanged rider. And then additionally, line 143, the Rare Disease Advisory Council. This was a provision that was enacted in law in 2019, which appropriated money to the University of Minnesota for the Rare Disease Advisory Council. The prior session law in 2019 stipulates that the Rare Disease Advisory Council has a $0 appropriation FY24, so that's why it appears in the spreadsheet as one time. The only two change items for the University of Minnesota, those are on line 148, the first one, which is $13.750 million in fiscal year 22 and $26 million in fiscal year 23 for a total change in the biennium of $39,750,000 for O&M for operations and maintenance. And then the $26 million continues on into the TAILS for $52 million of TAILS change for operations and maintenance. You can see the total operations and maintenance appropriation on line 153. And then scrolling down are the state specials listed in the bill. Many of them remain the same. On line 157, 158, 159 are base language and base appropriations for the Ag and Extension State Special, Health Sciences, Institute of Technology, College of Science and Engineering. There was one change to a state special that's on line 160, that was a system special. As you can see on line 164, the system special increases, there's an increase for the NRRI institution. by $1 million in each fiscal year. That increase to the system special is one time, and so is the increase to NRRI. There is language in the bill that resets the base of this appropriation to $7.181 million in the tails. And that's, you can find the base appropriation in the base column or in the tails column for the DE amendment on line 160. Additionally, on line 169 is the University of Minnesota total general fund appropriation spend. As I discussed at the top of the sheet, this line matches the top of the sheet in the general fund summary. I will point out that the DE amendment maintains the on line 171, the primary education healthcare access fund appropriation to the University of Minnesota. And then on line 173 is the total between the total general fund in addition to the healthcare access fund for the University of Minnesota. Line 176 begins the Mayo Foundation, the fourth agency within the committee's jurisdiction. Line 178 is the Mayo Medical School at $665,000 in each fiscal year, and that appropriation remains unchanged from the base. Line 179 is the Mayo Family and Residency Program. That is $686,000 in each fiscal year, and that remains unchanged from the base. Line 181 is the total for the Mayo Foundation, and the Mayo Foundation is being funded in the DE at the base level. Line 183 is another line that transfers to the top of the sheet, which I addressed earlier, which is the total higher education, or excuse me, this is the all fund spend. So the general fund and the healthcare access fund between all four agencies combined are on line 183 for a total spend of $3,535,782,000 in fiscal year 22 and 23. The last part of the spreadsheet is a tracking of the various transfers out of the general fund and into various special revenue fund accounts. For members that have not served on higher ed before, you may notice that as you read the bill, there are various appropriations to the Office of Higher Education that are then transferred, that are appropriated to the general fund and then transferred to the special revenue fund. And those appropriations being the spinal cord, traumatic brain injury research grants, the dual training competency grants for OHE, line 189, the teacher shortage loan forgiveness, line 190, the ag educators loan forgiveness, and line 191, the aviation degree loan forgiveness. Those lines show the general fund appropriations leading the general fund, and then lines 193 through 198 show those being deposited into the special revenue fund in specific accounts for those appropriations. This is unchanged from the base, but I wanted to provide some information for members to see how those funds flow to the special revenue fund. And Madam Chair, I believe that completes my walkthrough of the spreadsheet. I will stop my screen share and then turn it over to Mr. Hopkins to go over the language components of the DE.
Thank you. We will move to Mr. Hopkins, and then we will go to member questions. I see no hands up at this point. So Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so I'm gonna walk mainly through Article 2 of the bill, which has the policy provisions. Article 2 also includes the entirety of House File 1181, the Office of Higher Education's agency bill, the first engrossment that was passed out of this committee earlier. So some of those provisions will be familiar to members. Before starting in on Article 2, I just wanted to point out, since the chair mentioned it within Article 1, at the bottom of page 11 on Article 1, that's where you can find the tuition freeze language for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. This freezes the undergraduate tuition rate at both colleges and universities in both the 2021 to 2022 and the 2022 to 2023 academic years. So moving on to Article 2, this begins on page 21 of the DE. Section 1, concurrent enrollment grants. This establishes a new statutory program administered by the Office of Higher Education that would award matching grants to post-secondary institutions on a competitive basis in order to expand concurrent enrollment offerings. As Mr. Savory mentioned, this receives a base appropriation of $340,000 per year. The appropriation is not new. The program is not new per se, but it is a new in statute. It came from the governor's bill. In previous years, it has only existed within Article 1 as a rider in OHE's overall appropriation. Section 2, this comes from the agency bill, transcript access. This creates a new statute prohibiting schools from attaching transcript release to payment of student debts or conditioning the release of or limiting the release of transcripts on the basis of debt payment. Section 3 on page 23, this affects the state grant program. It updates terminology in existing law that extends state grant eligibility for students who withdraw from school due to an illness. The term major illness is changed to serious health condition. It also expands the extension to students who withdraw in order to care for a spouse, child, or a parent with a serious health condition. Section 4 on page 24, this also affects the state grant program, cost of attendance. This increases the default amount of the living and miscellaneous expense or LME allowance from 106% to 110% of the federal poverty guidelines for a one-person household in Minnesota for 9 months. Section 5 on page 25, again affecting the state grant program awards. So a student is not eligible to receive a state grant award if they've already obtained a BA or they have been enrolled in an undergraduate, enrolled as an undergraduate full-time for 8 semesters or the equivalent. So the change in this section is providing that non-credit developmental education courses do not count towards that 8-semester limit for state grant eligibility. Section 6 on page 25, this affects child care grants. It removes eligibility caps regarding enrollment and instead caps eligibility for grants for those who have received grant funds over 10 semesters. It reduces the minimum enrollment requirement for undergraduates from 6 credits to 1 credit. It also updates terminology in existing law, again, switching that term major illness to serious health condition. And it also expands the extension to students who withdraw in order to care for a spouse, child, or parent. Section 7 on page 26, this also affects child care grants, amount and length of grants. This changes the maximum annual grant award for each eligible child to equal the applicant's maximum federal Pell Grant award. It ties grant awards amounts to the applicant's expected family contribution under the federal needs analysis and provides greater detail on calculating grant awards based on the number of undergraduate credits in which a recipient has enrolled. Section 8 on page 28, this affects Indian scholarships. Student eligibility, this expands eligibility to students who are enrolled in or citizens of a federally recognized or Canadian recognized tribe, regardless of ancestry or blood quantum. Section 9 on page 28, this also affects Indian scholarships award amount. This clarifies that specified award maximums are per academic year and that awards may be given for 4 quarters, 3 semesters, or the equivalent during the course of a single fiscal year. Section 10 is a new section. It creates an aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color scholarship program that would be administered by the Office of Higher Education. It's for persons of color or American Indians enrolled in a teacher preparation color, or teacher preparation program. The first scholarships would be awarded by November 1st, 2021. Section 11, this is on page 31 of the DE. This creates a new section of law, new section of statute, underrepresented teacher candidate grants. And in conjunction with the next section, section 12, what the DE has done is basically taken the existing program, the teacher candidate grant program, which has previously awarded money both to teacher candidates in shortage areas and to teacher candidates who come from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups in the statewide teacher workforce. And it split that two-track model into just 2 separate statutory programs. So this is the first part of those two separate programs. It is a program that just deals with teacher candidates from underrepresented racial or ethnic groups. Section 12, and the two programs really mirror each other. Section 12, so this is narrowing the existing teacher candidate grant programs, but it only deals with teacher candidates in shortage areas, license or shortage areas. Section 13 on page 35. This is for the self-refi program. It removes explicit monetary limitations on the refi program and gives the Office of Higher Education discretion to set limits based on the financial capacity and stability of the program. It also increases the maximum loan available under the program from $70,000 to $250,000. The next several sections deal with the dual training competency grant program. There are some new definitions that are added in section 15 of the bill, which is on page 35. Section 14 is just technical changes to conform to those new definitions there in section 15. Section 16, dual training grants. This removes specifications about training under the grant program because this is addressed in the new definition of eligible training there in section 15. The added requirement for an agreement between the grantee and the training provider is also transferred to this subdivision from the subdivision that's amended in section 18 of the bill. Section 17, this again removes provisions that become redundant under sections 15 and 16 of the bill. Section 18, staying with dual training competency grants. Now we're on page 37 of the DE. This makes more technical changes conforming to the new definitions. It also removes a requirement that the employer applicants state the number of trainees who are recent high school graduates. And this is related to the change in the next section, section 19, again, sticking with dual training competency grants. This eliminates the prioritization of employers who train recent high school graduates and makes it one of a list of factors that the Office of Higher Education can consider when they're awarding dual training grants. It also includes the employer's commitment to diverse employees as a factor. Section 20, this is at the bottom of page 38 of the DE. This makes more technical changes conforming with the new definitions. It also makes a clarifying change regarding what constitutes a large business for purposes of the program. Section 21 on page 39, this makes more technical changes conforming to the new definitions. Section 22, sticking with dual training grants here, this clarifies that an employee who receives training under the program only needs to apply for financial aid if the employee is receiving training at an institution eligible to receive financial aid. Section 23, moving out of the dual training competency grant program here, this affects private and out-of-state public post-secondary institutions. This requires an institution to submit a registration renewal application when it enters receivership. Section 24, at the bottom of page 39 of the DE, this provides that an institution is deemed to have ceased operations when it fails to complete a renewal of its registration required due to a change of ownership. And that's the entering receivership part. So sections 23 and 24 paired together in that way. Section 25, this is on page 41. Again, affecting private and out-of-state public post institutions. This clarifies that the exemption for regionally accredited institutions to specify that it refers to institutions accredited by the Higher Learning Commission, which is the regional accreditor of Minnesota. And this is prompted by the fact that the U.S. Department of Education no longer distinguishes between national and regional accreditors. Section 26 in the Private and Out-of-State Public Act. This is the revised risk analysis section. It codifies more specific and detailed procedures regarding the analysis that OHE performs in order to determine if an institution is at risk of precipitous failure and closure. The next section, section 27, begins on the bottom of page 45, again in the Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Act. This requires institutions to maintain for at least 10 years student records that are required for professional licensure in Minnesota. Section 28, this affects private career schools. So now we're moving on to Private Career School Act. Permanent student records. This requires institutions to maintain for at least 10 years records required for professional licensure in Minnesota. Section 29, school closure. This is within Private Career School Act. This provides that an institution is deemed to have ceased operations when it fails to complete a renewal of its registration due to the required change of ownership of the institution. And so this is matching the Private Career Schools Act to the Private and Out-of-State Public Post-Secondary Act. Section 29 here then pairs with Section 30. Section 30 creates a new subdivision requiring institutions to submit a licensure renewal application when there is a change of ownership of the institution. Section 31 begins on page 49 of the DE. In the Private Career Schools Act, this amends a subdivision within the section of law concerning school refund policies in order to provide greater detail about how refund amounts are calculated. Section 32, affecting private career schools, cancellation occurrence. This amends a subdivision within the section of law, this amends a section concerning refund policies to specify how a student can notify the institution when the student is withdrawing from a program. It provides that a student is not required to provide written notice of withdrawal and provides that a student shall be considered withdrawn if the student has not attended class for 14 consecutive days without contacting the institution. Section 33 and 34 both concern the hunger-free campus designations. Section 33 expands the existing hunger-free campus designation, which currently is just for state colleges, to state universities, University of Minnesota campuses, and private nonprofit post-secondary institutions. Section 34 allows the relevant student associations for each kind of campus to create an application process and approve awards for their respective campuses. When this bill came before the committee, it would have created three separate statutes, one for Minn State institutions, one for the University of Minnesota institutions, and one for private nonprofit post-secondary institutions. And what the DE has done is consolidated those three into a single statute. And at the end of the DE, there's a revisor instruction for the revisor to take this statute out of the chapter of law, which just affects Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and into a chapter that is about post-secondary institutions more broadly, since it's expanded now beyond just Minn State institutions. Section 35, the Z degree program for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. This makes various changes to the Z degree program, which is a zero textbook cost associate degree requirement for colleges. Section 36, this deals with 529 plans, the state's college saving plans. It amends the subdivision regarding data classification for the state's 529 program to allow the Office of Higher Education to share account owner information with the Department of Revenue for purposes of statistical research and analysis. Section 37, this is on page 54 of the DE. This is the governor's proposed direct admissions pilot program. Section 38 on page 55, this is a career and technical educator pilot program. It is a pilot program that directs Winona State University to partner with Minnesota State College Southeast to develop a teacher preparation program, which would lead to licensure within one of the career and technical education fields. Section 39 is that revisor instruction to recode the hunger-free campus grants section. And then section 40 on page 55, the last section of Article 2, this is the repealer section. This repeals a section of law authorizing a now defunct loan repayment program. It repeals a subdivision controlling renewal of licenses for private career schools. Both of those came from the Office of Higher Education's agency bill. The new addition is it repeals 136F.245 subdivision 3, which is the expiration date for the hunger-free campus program. So that will be continuing indefinitely now. Finally, it repeals certain OHE administrative rules governing state grants, which were used as a match to the National Service Scholars Program, which is now expired. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 2. I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hopkins and Mr. Savory. And I am going to go to lead Representative O'Neill first, and then move to Representative Erickson and Representative Sandel. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first question actually is for you, Madam Chair. I understand that amendments are due at 5 o'clock today, but it was very late yesterday when we actually got the DE, and now we've just done the walkthrough. And so it's a little bit challenging to draft amendments and get them submitted by 5 o'clock today when we'll be meeting most likely till 4:30. And I know that our nonpartisan staff have been working incredibly hard in all committees, working through Easter break and everything else to get things compiled for us. So I'm wondering if you could extend that just a little bit so that we can, I haven't even had an opportunity to huddle with my team, Madam Chair, because of the lateness of the DE being published and to us, and just the massive schedule we all have, as I'm sure you do as well. I haven't had 5 minutes to really think all of this through, because it's just been one committee after another. So I'm wondering if you could possibly extend the deadline so that I could at least huddle with my team to discuss possible amendments. I had some in process of being drafted, so it's not like I'm not on top of some of it, but I would like to at least discuss it with some of my team to get input, and we haven't had that opportunity.
Representative O'Neill, we could extend the publicly posting the amendments a little bit later tonight so that you and your team can huddle. Does that sound good to you?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, so good.
Thank you. And then to the content of the bill, and just a couple clarification questions on that, if I might. I'm wondering if nonpartisan staff, I know they had mentioned this to me when we first started committee, but if they have in their notes what Minn State's FTE, so their full-time equivalent student population, is versus the University of Minnesota. And I'm gonna give them a minute to look at that, and I'll go on to another question, because I know that they're gonna take a minute to find that. They have presented us a lot of information. And then to you, Madam Chair, I have a question on line 28 of the spreadsheet, and it has to do with an increase to OHE's base, the administration base, which is in 2022-23, it's 700,000 increase. And I'm just wondering, I believe that's above what the governor asked, so i.e. the agency asked, and if you could let us know why that would be, why the in the spreadsheet it's above even what the governor's ask was. Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative O'Neill. I am going to be doing an author's amendment to clarify that. So just wanted to let you know that.
Very good, Madam Chair. Then I'll just wait for that. That's fine. And then, Madam Chair, I'm just curious, unless I'm not remembering correctly, section 38 on the last page of the bill, on page 55, Madam Chair, I believe this is a section that we didn't hear, the career and technical educator pilot project. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that. And I don't believe we heard that language in committee, but correct me if I'm wrong. And just wondering why that's there and what was the impetus of that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. We did have conversations with Representative Pawlowski when we were drafting the bill, and we did reach out. I know Representative Albright is a big supporter of this program, as I understand as well. We thought we had support to include it in the language, but we can talk further about that together if need be.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. So maybe when we do public testimony, there'll be testimony to that, but first, I want to make sure I was remembering correctly that we hadn't heard it, and if we could have some public testimony as to what it is and why we've got this in the bill. I would have asked when we were in committee, going through the bill, but we didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah, and I want to add too is that we did hear it in Ways and Means, and we were asked to hear it in our bill today too. So that's what we are doing, and hopefully we'll be able to come together with language.
Very good. Works. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's see. I think that's, oh, I know what else. So the tuition freeze. I'm wondering, when we have public testimony tomorrow, if Minn State that's affected by the tuition freeze, if they would speak to how that affects their bottom line and their budgeting, and particularly into the TALES. I just want to make sure we fully understand the impact of that. It's great on students, but I just want to hear, you know, we've had a lot of impacts to our institutions because of the pandemic. And if I'm sure they're listening, so if they would prepare, and they probably already are doing that, but I would specifically like to hear the impact on their budget in the TALES and specifically. And I think that was the last question I had. Oh, I do have one other quick. I know we didn't have a whole lot of conversation about the riders in committee, and one that kind of stuck out to me was on line 110 of the spreadsheet. And it's the next generation under riders. And I don't remember hearing much about that. The other ones I kind of knew about from being on the committee before. But if the U of M comes, I would like to hear a little bit about that, what that is. And or is that under Minn State? Minn State. That's it. That's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I want to thank the two presenters for their comprehensive walkthrough. I am one who really does appreciate thorough walkthroughs, and both gentlemen did an excellent job. But my first question is to piggyback off Representative O'Neill and what we're going to learn tomorrow about the tuition freeze. At the same time we learn about the tuition freeze and the non-tuition freeze at the U of M, would we also be able to know what the tuition is at the U of M, Duluth, because I know they're different, and then a variety of the state colleges, or all of them? So when we are getting a testimony, I would like to alert the testifiers to the fact that at least I would like to know what the tuition is at these various institutions. Then my next question is for Mr. Hopkins. And Mr. Hopkins, in Article 2, Section 7, how many would be affected by the change in line 26.23? And this is under the child care grants. The maximum award to the applicant equals the maximum federal Pell Grant. Do we have any idea how many would be affected by that?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I do not know. The Office of Higher Education might have numbers on that, specific numbers on that. I'm not sure if it will actually affect the number of total grants that are given out as much as it would affect the average grant award amount. But the Office of Higher Education might be able to give a little more detailed testimony on how that would actually
Thank you, out. And hopefully they're listening so they know that that would be good information to learn tomorrow if possible. Mr. Hopkins, also, Madam Chair, Article 2, Section 10, no, excuse me, Section 9, lines 29.14. I know that we didn't discuss this during the presentation of this bill, but when scholarships are given for eligible students for four quarters, three semesters, or the equivalent, and this is under the American Indian Education Scholarships, is this done with other scholarships as well, do you know? Or is this exclusive to this particular scholarship award?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, my understanding from the Office of Higher Education's testimony is that this is aligning the Indian scholarships with other scholarships in allowing the award to be given for the entirety of the year rather than for just a portion.
Thank you for that clarification. That's important for us to know. And my final question is, and I think, Madam Chair, this is for Mr. Hopkins as well. Do we have a definition in this proposal or any place in statute other than what's proposed in K-12 for shortage areas. When we're talking in this proposal in Article 2, Section 12, teacher candidate grants in shortage areas. Is shortage defined in statute or will it be defined in this proposal? I know we have a definition that we're considering in the K-12 omnibus bill, but is there anyone here, any place in statute in the higher education chapters of law that define shortage areas?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, so the statute currently has a definition of shortage area. You can see it on page 33, lines 11 to 14. And it basically piggybacks on Pelsby's definition of a shortage area that they come up with using data collected for the teacher supply and demand report. So it can refer to a licensor field or an economic development region that Pelsby designates as being a shortage area.
So thank you, Mr. Hopkins. So that's present language. I think we've done something different in K-12, but I'll be ready for tomorrow just in case we need to address that definition so that it is very specific. That's it, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Representative Sandell, and then we have Representative Albright on deck. If you could unmute yourself, that would be great, Representative Sandell.
Sorry, Chair Bernardi, thank you
no
very
problem.
Much.
No problem.
Just as Representative Erickson, I appreciate the detail and presentation that we received line by line. I have a question for Mr. Savory, though. There are, I think, four state specials identified in your presentation. Three of them seem to be relatively identified, one to Mayo, I think, and one to Department of Agriculture. I can't remember the third, but then there was a $16 million appropriation that said system special. Does that mean the money, $16 million, is simply going to the University of Minnesota system and they decide where to send that money, or is that $16 million identified to a single project?
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, if you'll just bear with me for one moment, I'm just gonna look up the exact part of the bill so I can direct you correctly.
Sure, thanks. I don't wanna keep, excuse me, Madam Chair. I don't wanna take up a lot of time. If you wanna send me a note, that's fine. And we can go on. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Savory, do you want to do it offline or here?
I actually just have it right now, Madam Chair, if that's okay.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, the system special is on lines 18.33 is the appropriation to the system special in the DE amendment. And then it specifies that on lines 19.1 through 19.5, that it's for general research, the Labor Education Services, NRRI, the Natural Resources Research Institute, the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs, or CURA, and then the Bell Museum of Natural History and the Humphrey exhibit at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. So that's the kind of the contents of the system special. Further on line 19.6, the DE specifically appropriates of that amount $3 million in each fiscal year to NRRI. On the spreadsheet, it lists the system special increasing by $1 million per year, and that's that designation or rider to NRRI that is increasing.
Representative Sandell.
Chair Bernardi and Mr. Savory, thank you very much. That's fine. Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few comments about the bill itself on a couple of the provisions. Very appreciative that the spinal cord and traumatic brain injury research grants have found their way back into the omnibus delete all. I think we're all strong proponents of this provision, and I'm very glad to make note of that. Minnesota Independence Life and College Community, I see that that's back in there. That's heartening to me. I will just make a strong proposal for that one, Madam Chair, as we move forward. It's probably one of the only provisions in here that has a $38 return on investment for every dollar invested in the program. So I would certainly encourage your staff, as well as you march forward with the conference committee, to take consideration of what the other body has funded this program for, both in one-time money, as well as to compel us to look at that in the greater landscape of how important that program is. I note that the minority lead made reference to the Career and Technical Education Pilot Program, which is a joint mission that Representative Pawlowski and I have had, and it was actually birthed into some manner of form during the mini session in Monona over a dinner a couple of years ago. We recognize that not every career has to have a four-year degree. And with that being said, I think it's also important that we prepare the educators of those people that recognize that a career in the trades is probably as, or in some cases more fulfilling for them than assuming that a four-year degree is the most popular. It's House File 380. It was introduced jointly, and it has bipartisan support. It sets aside some money for a pilot program to see that a dream that Representative Pawlowski and I have birthed together really does stand the test of time, and I believe that it will. So I'm very appreciative that it has been included here, and I hope for great things to come from that. And with that, I'll end my comments. Thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one quick question as I was looking through my spreadsheet again. I noticed that there is no appropriation specific for mental health services. It's on line 114 of the fiscal work spreadsheet, and that's under Mins State. And, you know, I just can't get it out of my head when we had the students come and testify and how distressed they were and how much mental health services that they were asking for. And then outside of committee, I actually had a long conversation with the faculty at Mins State, and it was something that they brought up repeatedly to not only myself, but I know, Madam Chair, you were also a part of that meeting. So I'm just wondering, we have a healthy target, 120 million and 150 million in the tails. So I'm just wondering, curious as to why there's not an increase to mental health services on line 114. If there was something else that I'm not aware of, that other money that will be going that way, maybe the federal money that's coming or something. I wonder if you could speak to that, Madam Chair. And also if the fiscal staff have had an opportunity to find the full-time equivalent student population for Mins State versus U of M. And they may not have a current number because we've gone through a pandemic. I get that. But a number that any number that they do have is helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Savory, do you have a comment about that?
Yes, Madam Chair. I was going to respond to Representative O'Neill that based on data that Minnesota State sent me over the winter, I believe the total headcount as now, but is 112,949 for Mins State. And to your point, Representative O'Neill, I would caution that perhaps the institutions, both Mins State and the U of M, could bring updated data tomorrow. I know, as you mentioned before, that there has enrollment has been volatile in some sense. I would also add that according to the Office of Enrollment Statistics at the University of Minnesota, the headcount there appears to be 60,533. But again, just doing a quick search on university resources on the Office of Institutional Research, that's what I came up with. But I imagine the university could provide a much more in-depth analysis in terms of the actual FYE equivalent.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sure. So when we have Mins State and the U of M come, you know, I'm sure they're listening, if they would just bring their current numbers, because I know we've been through a terrible pandemic and the numbers are volatile. So It's a little hard to do a budget when we look at what we've been through. We don't know what federal money is coming through. We've got $552 million coming specifically for higher education, but we don't know where it's going to be spent or how it's going to be spent or what we're going to be allowed to do. So it's a little bit difficult to do a budget with all those unknowns. So, and then, Madam Chair, I wonder if you could just address the question I had about mental health services to Mid State on line 114. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill, for that question. I want to point out in line 115 of the spreadsheet, it has supporting students' basic needs of 2.5 million over the biennium. That includes mental health funding. It has, as I understand, mental health hubs and hubs in the students' basic needs. So maybe that's Minnesota State can talk about that when they get here, how they're incorporating the mental health needs in that funding request that we're funding.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you for that. I know that when you and I talked with the Mid State faculty, they were frustrated, let's just say, that it was expected that outside services were available and they aren't always in the communities in which Mid State operates. And they didn't have any money for counselors on campus. And so my hope was to see something in that line to help, you know, some of the campuses that don't have mental health services near them or availability near them, that they could actually hire a mental health professional for the campus, which is why the question. So I just wanted to put that on the record that I think that's incredibly vital right now, considering, I mean, you heard the students, they are just at wit's end, as we all are, I'm sure. But they, when they start talking about suicidal ideation at age 20 years old, that greatly concerns me. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Thank you. We have Representative Albright with a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe this question is directed to Mr. Savory. And I'm looking at line 160 and line 164 with regard to the system special NRRI increase. Could you walk that through me? It looks like it's just a biennium increase without anything in the base, in the tails, I should say. Is that correct?
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Albright, the increase to NRRI is $1 million in each fiscal year. Currently, the base for that appropriation is $2 million in each fiscal year. So the increase of $1 million in each fiscal year, you are correct, is one time. If current law were to go forward after that, there would be $2 million remaining in that appropriation. There is language within the bill that, in effect, resets the base to the original $2 million appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Savory.
Members, are there any further questions? I just want to Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, apologies.
No problem.
And I'm not sure if this question is most likely for Mr. Savory again, but on line 171, Mr. Savory, I see a usage of the Healthcare Access Fund for primary care education at the University of Minnesota. If you have it, that's fine. Otherwise, I probably have other means I do of ascertaining what the balance is of the HCA fund. But can you tell me right off the cuff what the balance in the HCA is?
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, I don't have that information at the ready. I can check in with Human Services staff and the Chief Fiscal Analyst to get that information to you, though. Happy to do it.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any further questions? Representative O'Neill, I want to just follow up with that time, changing it. Let's push it back 2 hours so you have time to huddle and do it at 7 p.m. instead of 5 p.m.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. That would be very helpful. I mostly am worried about staff. You know, being a former Senate staffer, the pressure is unbelievable on them and in the middle of this pandemic. So I don't know if we could accomplish everything that we need to accomplish by five. So I appreciate the extra time.
I just want to thank our staff for being willing to help out and working later this evening to help all of our members. So thank you for doing that. Are there any other, I don't see any other hands raised. We do have some testifiers here today, and we can move on with, start with one of them, and that would be Commissioner Olson, the Office of Higher Education. Welcome to our committee today.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and good afternoon, Chair, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dennis Olson, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share just a few brief comments in support of the Higher Education Omnibus Bill, House File 993, on behalf of the Office of Higher Education. We'd like to first thank the committee for working to incorporate most of the governor's budget recommendations into the bill. And we especially appreciate the recognition that targeted supports and investments and modifications that improve programs are the exact responses that we need at a time when our students, particularly those who are already marginalized, have been significantly impacted by the pandemic. We appreciate that you are seeking to provide additional support for the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System within your budget target to align with the governor's recommendation to support operations and maintenance requests of both systems. Of course, after a year of adjusting for budget challenges of distance education and reduced enrollments and the added costs of protecting health and safety of faculty, staff, and students during this pandemic, your proposed investments in this bill will help them continue to provide a world-class education. We also appreciate your continued support for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education and the critical programs that we manage on behalf of Minnesota students. Just a few quick highlights include the recommended investment of $6.5 million over the base for the Minnesota State Grant Program, which will allow the Minnesota State Grant to continue to help nearly 80,000 low and middle income students attend the college of their choice. Your recommended increase to the living and miscellaneous expense is especially beneficial for low-income students and families, especially during this time. We also want to thank you for incorporating necessary program policy adjustments to the Minnesota Child Care Assistance Grant, the Minnesota Indian Scholarship Program, and the dual training grants to better provide services to students, employees, and employers in our state. We also want to thank you for support to the new initiatives such as the Hunger Free Campus Act and Direct Admissions Minnesota. We appreciate the committee for incorporating the agency policy bill, which we spoke to in detail a couple of times in previous hearings, which of course includes key provisions for student and consumer protections. We know there are still items that need to be worked through, and we look forward to working with the committee and other stakeholders as the bill continues through the process to create the best possible bill for Minnesota students during the conference committee process. Again, our agency thanks you for the great working relationship we have had with you and your staff. And Madam Chair, that concludes my testimony for today.
Thank you very much. We are going to move on to our next testifier, Myron France, Senior Vice President of Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay? I had a little earlier technical difficulty today, so I'm glad to hear it's coming out okay. Thank you. Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, and all members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate getting to meet with you again and going over our priorities for this particular bill. I want to thank the funding that you have provided in the bill, and I want to talk a little bit about our priorities. Now, on January 26, President Joan Gable presented the university's 22-23 biennial budget request of $46.5 million to this committee. As she noted then, our request is designed to address our most pressing needs as identified by our system-wide strategic plan. This is the first time the university has ever taken this approach. Our request prioritized the funding we believe is necessary to continue our mission of teaching, research, and service. As I mentioned earlier, we appreciate the funding, but the funding that you have provided, we believe, does not fully fund our request, and with some consequential impact is placed on our students and employees across the system. As you know, because of the serious shortfalls from the pandemic, we've had to freeze salaries at the university. A majority of our employees have taken pay cuts. We froze tuition and fees. Over the last 2 years, fiscal year 2020 and fiscal year 2021, we have addressed so far over $84 million of the pandemic shortfall with budget cuts and budget reserve use from the university. Like many employers, we have asked a tremendous amount of the people to make the University of Minnesota such a strong higher educational facility. This appropriation, unfortunately, may make it difficult for the university to move forward fully as we move out of the pandemic. It is increasingly difficult to support our employees, keep tuition costs low, address important needs across our system, and further research in areas like natural resources, health, healthcare, agriculture, and other important areas. So one of the things we want to do is to really put some discussion with you all as we move forward through this legislative process to try to address these urgent needs. Let me, though, address one issue right away. We've talked a lot about federal funds, and it's been noted recently that allocated federal funding to higher education may be available to address our budget needs reflected in our budget biennial request or to address future tuition reductions. However, based on guidance we have received thus far, federal funding is only available to offset proven revenue losses or expenditures directly tied to the pandemic. That is why, in following federal law thus far to address our budget deficits resulting from the pandemic, and under these federal guidelines, COVID-19 relief funds for ongoing operations or tuition reduction is not allowable. As you may recall, we had a $65 million budget deficit in fiscal 20 we were able to solve without seeking additional state help, and we are now facing a $170 million budget shortfall in fiscal 21. Again, we thank you for the funding you have provided, but we urge you to fully fund the budget request as the legislative process continues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Franz. We will now move to Mr. Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor of Finance and Facilities, Minnesota State. Mr. Mackey.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, members of committee. For the record, I'm Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities with Minnesota State. Appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony on the House Higher Education Omnibus Bill. I'd like to thank the committee and the committee administrator, Sean Herring, for your work this session. Minnesota State stands ready to continue to provide additional information to the committee in the coming weeks. Our system's biennial budget request focused on continuing to provide affordable access to higher education across the state of Minnesota. Our primary goal is to provide an exceptional education to all Minnesotans so they can become the talent Minnesota needs. Accordingly, our budget requests two main priorities, campus responsiveness and stabilization, and equity and affordability, aligned with this mission and work to provide direct support to our students financially or through providing them the programs and services that they need to be successful. We appreciate the support in this bill for these two priorities, the $64.5 million for campus operations and maintenance, funding for student basic needs, including mental health resources. We also appreciate your support of our textbook affordability work with the funding you put in the bill to expand the Z degree program to additional colleges and universities. As the CFO of this system, I also want to express my appreciation for your strong position of base funding, particularly in the second year of the biennium, because that is crucial to our campus's budget stability and planning. As we've discussed in a prior committee hearing this session, state appropriation and tuition comprise the majority of our revenue and help ensure our colleges and universities can offer the necessary programs and services to meet students' needs and the needs of their communities, regions, and state. Given this, the tuition freeze in the bill in both years of the biennium is a concern of ours. Chair Bernardi and members, thank you again for your support of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and for the opportunity to provide testimony today. We look forward to being your partner as the bill progresses throughout this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions for our testifiers today? I don't see any hands up. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we have him in state right here, and he did just reference tuition freeze, I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on the impact. If they know what kind of deficit that would put them in. They don't have a lot of options. So tuition and fees and then what we provide, and there's very, very small other categories, but I'm just curious as to what kind of impact that would be on them. Are they going to have to lay off teachers or professors or administration, or what's their plan if it's frozen and we didn't actually make their whole $130 million request?
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill, a tuition freeze and the impact it would have on Minnesota State. As we testified earlier in the session, our general fund revenue, which supports our instruction and most of our student services and academic support, is made up of basically 50% state appropriation and 50% tuition. So if tuition is frozen for 2 years, there will be no permanent base adjustment to the tuition to help cover ongoing costs that occur, which are primarily personnel costs with 75% of most of our colleges and universities budget being faculty, staff, and other support. We, as we look at this and to echo what Senior Vice President Franz mentioned, federal funding will help us in the short term, but having an unfunded tuition freeze without a permanent revenue stream will provide a difficulty to fund ongoing costs in the future. So we don't have exact numbers yet of what the impact would be, as it would vary at individual colleges and universities, but it's fair to say if we have less revenue overall as a system, we will ultimately down the road have less programs and services to offer, which would mean less faculty and staff.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you for that. Can you also speak to the $552 million coming from the last federal package? I know the University of Minnesota had a meeting with me this morning. They were able to articulate what they thought their portion of that would be. And if it follows previous requirements, quite a bit of it has to go directly to students, and they don't have a whole lot of restriction as to what they could spend it on. So they might just take it and go to Florida. I don't know. So I'm just wondering, what do you anticipate receiving from the $552 million, if you have that idea? And if you could just elaborate on, in the past, how much has gone directly to students, and if you had, when you did that pass-through, if there were some restrictions that you are aware of what could students spend it on, and then how much of it went to the institutions. If you have that information, that'd be helpful.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill. The 30 colleges and 7 universities of Minnesota State, our projected amount that we expect to receive through the American Rescue Plan is a total of $328 million. And I would put a significant caveat to that, as we have not received an official, our campuses have not received an official award from the Department of Education yet, along with the guidelines. These are estimates that have been provided, credible estimates that have been provided by national higher education associations. This particular one is from the American Council of Education. If our campuses receive this $328 million, and it will go directly to each one of our 30 colleges and 7 universities from the U.S. Department of Education, not to the system and then to the campuses, we expect based on what we know today, based on that legislation is that 50% of that funding will go directly to our students in the form of grants, which would be $164 million. And to my understanding, there's no restrictions on how students would be able to spend that money once they receive that funding. If the criteria for funding is similar to the second round of stimulus funding, it prioritized students with exceptional need. The other 50% of the money, which in our case would be $164 million of institutional aid, would go to our colleges and universities, and we're awaiting the guidelines of how that funding could be spent. It's anticipating that it would be similar, again, to round two of funding, where it would be used primarily to cover additional costs and lost revenue that's directly related to the pandemic.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you for that. That's pretty much what I heard from the University of Minnesota this morning, that they weren't aware of any restrictions when the students received that money, although now it's supposed to go to students that have the highest need. But if you look at, I believe it was the most recent, no, I think it was the interim forecast, so like the July forecast, the intermediate one. And when we were looking at some of this trajectory change, and the MMB was talking about the increase in sales tax revenue, and they directly related that to stimulus money coming to Minnesota and people buying, and literally they were saying actual words from MMB, televisions and furniture. And so these are young people, so I'm guessing that would also include trips to Florida and all kinds of things like that. So hopefully they'd be responsible and put it somewhere that paid for tuition fees, books, food, that type of thing, but probably they will spend it on all kinds of things. So that's unfortunate that that is without any restriction whatsoever, I guess. But so then it's only 50% that goes directly to the institutions. And you had mentioned that was half of the $328 million. So would that be enough to kind of backfill the hole that you were talking about when we first started in January of $130 million, or do you still have a need above that? Because you didn't know that number when we started this conversation in January.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill, the federal money would definitely help in the short term and on a one-time basis fill some budget shortfalls for the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year. However, we still are 100% behind our biennial budget request and asking for base funding and for state appropriation in order to cover our ongoing costs once the federal money has been expended.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what would be that base funding? Are you still asking for the 130 or the 68? Which number do you think is the most appropriate adding to the base?
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
I'm Chair Bernardi, Representative O'Neill. Our biennial budget request was adding $120 million to the base over the biennium. $75 million of it was for campus responsiveness and stabilization, and $45 million of it was for equity and affordability. So that the request that our board approved in November is still our request, despite some of the other changes that have occurred since then, which we believe we need for our long-term success.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a little hard, like, doing this budgeting when you've got potential federal money coming in. Well, we know it's coming. We just need to know for sure how much it is. Recognizing that 50% of that will go directly to students, and hopefully they'll be responsible with it. I would say too that another study showed that 38%, we've had an increase in savings of 38% nationwide, so that's an encouraging thing. But I guess it's kind of hard to understand where Minn State is at when you've got $328 million coming, half of it goes to students. If we do a tuition fee freeze, that changes things. And then the request is still the same as it was in January. So I'm just trying to reconcile all of that. And if you have any further information when you come back tomorrow, I'm assuming you're going to give more testimony tomorrow, that would be really helpful for us to fully understand and get behind what it is that you need. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And we are almost at time. And I know that we have Representative Thompson has a question. And we're going to go, they're going to delete, we're going to go off air now. And so we will come back tomorrow. And Ms. Vice Chancellor Mackey, I'm assuming that you are going to be joining us and hopefully our other testifiers as well. And then what I want to say is, so very good questioning. And if we have to come back late, when we learn more and have to come back later and revisit this, these are all things, so many things are up in the air. And so appreciate everybody being here today and looking forward to our discussions tomorrow with our public testifiers. And we will move forward taking official action on this bill. And the amendments will be due at 7 p.m. tonight. The meeting is adjourned.